Okay, thank you so much for the kind introduction. Very good morning to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today, as I was told, it's still a new year. So I too wish you all a happy, prosperous, and good new year. Like the talk before the start of this Chinese New Year, I gave a talk. Chinese New Year Dhamma message, or Chinese New Year message, the Dhamma way. So the blessings are very important, like I explained. Although it's a Chinese tradition, nothing to do with Buddhism, because Buddhism came from India, actually, from Sakyamuni. But this Chinese tradition is very beautiful, very, very meaningful. If you know how to apply the Dhamma to achieve and realize what you want. Just like I have explained earlier on, we have a lot of this good, noble intention to wish our loved ones, our family members, our friends, colleagues, and all those whom we have relationship with, including ourselves. We wish good health, blessings, good life. Then, of course, prosperity and all those things. But do we know how to realize it? That's why when you have the Dhamma, you can bring about the condition for the fulfillment of all these blessings and goodness, if you understand. So that's why today's talk, I think the introducer didn't tell you what is the topic. I'm still waiting for the whiteboard to write it down for you. Anyway, the title, for those who know Pali, is a very important topic. Importance of cultivating Dana, Sila, and Bhavana. Have you heard of these three words? Dana, Sila, Bhavana. Good. For those who have heard before, it is very important. It's very meaningful. Dana means generosity. The Buddha say you should cultivate generosity. This is very important before you even start your cultivation, is it? Generosity is a must. It is something very important, the Buddha said. Then he brings us to the second part, is it? There is this what he calls sila or morality. So for us lay people, he said, you have to keep this minimum, the five precepts, the five moral precepts. The reason why he said we need to keep it is because it will help you avoid all evil. It will help protect you. So this advice is given out of love and compassion for us all, living beings and the monks, the cultivators, the devotees. It's given so that it can allow you to understand the importance of sila. When you keep this sila, the Buddha said, it will help you avoid all evil, which is his first advice to us all living beings. So the moral precepts are guidelines to avoid evil, and he has named these five major morality precepts, which are very important. I will elaborate on this as I go on. Then the third one is bhavana. Bhavana, as you know, is a very beautiful Pali words. It talks about the meditative practice or cultivation. Whatever that can bring about this wisdom born of bhavana is very useful for you. Bhavana is the meditative training of the mind to realize the wisdom that the Buddha taught. The three very important universal characteristics of nature, together with the realization of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the enlightenment in the here and the now. That's what bhavana is all about. Just like just now before we start, I think our brother and sister who conducted the puja, he described it so well. He said, we offer, I think he mentioned three things, like flower, that one is what? Pure, clear water. Remember? That is to remind you, to purify your mind, your heart, so that it can be rid of all these evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, all of the negativity, so that it can realize its pure states, so that you can actually revert back to your original nature, which is basically already enlightened, perfect. So through that, you can have the wisdom to understand life, to live life to the fullest, then to realize the beauty of what they call existence and life. Then you don't have to suffer anymore. There will be no more suffering, misery, fear, worry, and anxiety. Life will be full of meaning, very happy, very joyful, very meaningful. And you can really, really have this noble life. He called it the noble life because the noble ones are enlightened ones. The enlightened one's life is what the Buddha called the noble life. So this topic is very useful. Let's take it as a New Year message so that when you understand the significance of the Buddha's advice leading to the importance of this cultivation of these three things, dana, sila, and bhavana, you will know how to be a true disciple of the Buddha. You will know how to become a true Buddhist. So that we don't just claim ourselves to be a Buddhist. We don't just glorify the religion, the religious label, but never follow the advice of the Buddha. Never understand the true teachings of our teacher, Lord Buddha. He is the fully enlightened one, perfect in virtue, perfect in wisdom. So to be worthy of him, to be truly a disciple of the Buddha, we must at least heed his advice, cultivate his teaching, so that you can actually become a true disciple of his. The Buddha's advice is very simple, as we have heard, I think, many times. The famous Dhammapada sayings, Dhammapada verse 183, I think you have written them on your gate there, on the inside face, both in English and Mandarin. The Pali version is, I think you are familiar. The Buddha said, Sabba papasa akaranang, kusalesa upasampadan, sacitta pariyuttapadang, etang buddhana sasana. The meaning is very simple. The Buddha said, as a living being, if you follow this advice, your life will be beautiful. Your life will be destined for enlightenment. You will not have problem. The first advice is, sabbe is all, papasa akaranang. Papasa is evil, akaranang, you have to avoid. So all evil is to be avoided. Means not only avoid evil, all evil you have to avoid. And to do this, the Buddha actually did out of love and compassion for us all. He advised us to renew our precepts, the five precepts, every day. When you renew your precepts, you will have this ability to avoid the major evils. As we know the five precepts, you have chant and you have renewed them. The first one is what? The first one is what? You chant panatipata viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. What is the meaning of that? We undertake the training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. So this is a very important moral precept, the Buddha said. And this advice comes from the right view with regards to the law of karma. The Buddha said there are three very important spiritual laws that governs our life and our existence. When you understand them, you have the right view and wisdom to understand life, then you know how to live. Then you will know how to arise the causes and conditions for the good and noble life to arise. Otherwise, you will become deluded, you will become heedless, and through this delusion and heedlessness, conditioned by ignorance, you will entangle yourself with life and you will suffer. So the Buddha said, this spiritual law, law of karma, is a universal law. Nobody can escape from it, is it? Each and every one of us, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So because of that, the Buddha said, karma is very important because you reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. So understanding this is very important. Your life, you have to decide. It's so important that you make the right choice. Because if you don't avoid all evil, what will happen to your karma? Yeah? If you are heedless, what will happen to your karma? You reap what you sow. So if you are heedless and simply do things and create all those evil and negativity, causing harm, killing, deceive, cheating, committing sexual misconduct, telling lies and arising all the harsh and very, very wrong speech, very severe wrong speeches. Then if you partake in toxicant or drugs that cause your consciousness to be very low, then you violate all the moral rules. All this will lead to suffering, not only to yourself, but to fellow living beings and others. Sometimes you even pollute the planet, the environment, everything. So karmically, it will hit back at you. When there is condition, all this will come back to you. Whatever you do to people, hit back at you. So that's why you must have virtue. You must have goodness. You must avoid all evil. So understanding this, that's why the Buddha prescribed the five precepts for you to avoid all evil. That is the reason why the second category within Dana, Sila, and Bhavana, Sila is very important. And this comes from this right view with regards to the law of karma. So now, after we have understood, I have to write on the whiteboard. Just give me a minute. Okay, can you see what is written here? Is it clear? You can't see, I see. Wait, Let's hope this is clearer. Okay. This is generosity, This is morality, Sila. This is meditation. Is it clearer? Good. Okay, just now I have explained to you the importance of sila. Sila is morality. This one, you already more or less have a clear picture, Okay. This one, last one is bhavana. Meditation. Okay. You see, the Buddha's advice are very important. The Buddha's advice is, he start with avoid all evil. So this is sila. This is the first advice. Eh? Then do good. This is the second advice. Okay. So this one is categorized under generosity. Because the Buddha knew it's not easy for you to do good. Whatever good that we do are all conditioned by what we believe to be good. So what is good according to your views and opinion may not be the actual good, the nature's laws good. Sometimes what is good for you because you are selfish is not good for others. So because of that, the Buddha knew, he said, you have to do generosity. Generosity is relatively more easy. Chances is when you are generous, it is the wholesomeness, it is the goodness. That is what the Buddha mean by you must cultivate dana. Because dana is just to give. And most of the giving are born of your sincerity, your understanding, because you want to help people, you want to relieve suffering, you want to do something for society and the world. That's why generosity comes into being. And the Buddha knew this is very easy to do and you must do. And if you do, your life will change. The law of karma will make sure it benefits you. You reap what you sow, remember? The Buddha said, the more you give, the more you receive. That's it. When you are generous to people, generosity will come back to you. That's why you wish people prosperity, wishing you a happy and prosperous new year, like Gong Xi Fa Chai. How to Fa Chai? It's not luck. It's your good karma, your inheritance, your karmic inheritance. So if you have a lot of generosity, wealth will come to you. Look at what you are now, this life. If you are blessed with wealth, with materialistic things that comes by very naturally, means in the past you have cultivated them before. You look at Bill Gates, you look at Warren Buffett and all the, most of the rich people, they are basically very generous. And this life they do the same, they donated back so much to society, to humanity, to the world. So this is the aspect, the second advice of the Buddha. Kusalesa upasampada. Kusala are wholesomeness. Wherever there is condition to do wholesomeness, you must do. So the Buddha chose dana, which is generosity. There are three types of dana. First is what they call materialistic giving. You know what is materialistic giving? Give of material things. Yeah? Money, food, offering, or whatever. Hospitality, shelter, and all those things. And all these are quite easy for us to do. Yeah? Especially today, society is full of opportunity for you to do wholesomeness, generosity, or goodness, provided you understand what you are doing. You see the importance of this action. So this dana part, the first aspect of generosity, materialistic giving is very important. Give of materialistic things, including money, monetary value, or any types of offerings or gift, like you donate to building fund. You donate a plot of land for some good, maybe religious usage. Even you donate to schools for education and all those things. These are all part of materialistic donation, giving. So after materialistic, you have the second one. What is the second one? Huh? Give or want? Service is still you offering yourself. But this one is the Buddha call it gift of life. You know what is gift of life? When you donate certain things that can save life, like blood donation, pledge your organ, and all those things. Understand or not? Giving of good advice and counsel to people who are about to commit suicide, who are very depressed with life, who cannot understand life. These are all part of gift of life. You can give something to save life. Maybe like you say, offering your service, like what Ciji did. They go to all these nature's disastrous places and country where there are so much suffering beings. So when you offer your service, be a volunteer when you are there, when you are in the especially medical profession, you can save life. And this is also part of this. The third one is what? Give of what? Give of truth. Of truth. This is, most people always heard that this is the highest gift. Of all these three, the gift of truth is the highest gift, which is true. The Buddha said, you can give truth, which is the Buddha Dharma, because this is the one that can bring about enlightenment. This is the one that can liberate the living beings' mind from all suffering. So if you are capable of contributing to this, the gift of truth, then the Buddha said, this is the highest gift. That's why when you print Dharma books for free distribution, and most of these Dhamma books are beautiful. Sometimes you have to be careful too. Certain books, if you have read through, if you are very sure, then you donate. Otherwise, you have to use your understanding and wisdom to see which are the appropriate book, because it has its effect, both sides. Okay? The other way is, just like today, we share our understanding. Through Dharma talk, we can actually give truth. Then you can also, like SJBA, make appropriate announcement that on such and such a day, such and such a person is giving Dharma talk, or whatever. So if you can contribute towards the condition for people to receive truth, then you are participating in one of these dana. So this part I think is easy. Generosity. Now, do you understand? Clear? Okay, good. Then morality is sila. Just now I already explained. This one involve your five precepts. So now I ask you one question. The first precept, like we said, we undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow beings. So that first precept, is it evil? Killing and causing harm to fellow living beings, is it evil? It's evil, isn't it? It's very easy to understand. What type of person will do that? An angry, violent, and selfish person. A deluded person. That's why you realize all those who violate the precepts, they have these three evil roots, the Buddha said. The three evil roots. You know what are these? These are the roots of all evil. When you have this in your mind or mind state or in your consciousness, it is very evil. Selfishness. This is the first one, or what they call greed. a selfish person. Then you have what they call angry or violent person. Angry or violent person. So this is under ill will or hatred. Greed, hatred. Then the last one is, of course, delusion. Or in Pali is called moha. Lobha, dosa, and moha. So keeping the five precepts are very important. This will lead to avoidance of all evil. When you avoid all evil, your negative karma will be gone. When your negative karma is gone, wholesomeness will arise, goodness will arise. Because for you to have goodness, you must have these precepts. Because the Buddha is very wise, is it? The absence of evil is good. So you don't try to be good. You don't try to be perfect. If you can avoid all evil, you are already good because you are incapable of evil, incapable of harming, cheating, deceiving. So you check very, very clearly all the mental intention behind what you do. So now we come to the more important aspect. How to cultivate this sila? The Buddha actually recommend under the Noble Eightfold Path. Just now you all chant. The four right effort. You remember? Noble Eightfold Path. The four right effort. What are the four right effort? The right effort to abandon the wrong thought, the wrong speech, and the wrong action. Understand that? Then the right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. Then the other two right effort is for the wholesomeness. The right effort to actually arise the right thought, the right speech, and the right action, which is still not in you. Then the last right effort is, if you already have some of this right thought, right speech, and right action or goodness in you, he said you must continue with the right effort to either maintain or refine upon whatever goodness and wholesomeness that you have, you already have. So that right effort is very important. To maintain and refine upon whatever goodness and wholesomeness that you already have. So to cultivate this one, you need meditation, bhavana. Because without bhavana, you cannot train your mind to cultivate sila. So sila actually involves part of bhavana. You have to train your mind under bhavana. This is the third advice. Purify your mind. Purify your mind. So under bhavana, the first stage of purifying your mind is to train your mind. To be heedful. Or ever mindful. This is very important training. When your mind is not trained, you know what happened. The Buddha said the untrained mind is like a devil's workshop, very evil, very heedless, make a lot of mistakes, entangle itself with life, not peaceful, always restless, having a lot of problems. Whereas a trained mind is calm, peaceful, and aware within. That's why when you train your mind, it's very different. There is clarity. there is no fear, worry, anxiety, and unhappiness or other mental states inside the mind. This mind is quiet, peaceful, calm, aware within. Such a mind is heedful. That's why the Buddha said, if you understand the importance of heedfulness, the importance of training your mind, Dhammapada verse 21, you must go and read and understand it. The Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die, which means those who train their mind, they are ever mindful. They are destined for enlightenment. They will not have problem. But on the opposite, within the Dhammapada verse 21, the Buddha also said, heedlessness, those who are heedless, is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Here the meaning dead means not as a dead person, understand? Here the meaning is, the Buddha said, spiritually, you are as if dead. If you are heedless, you don't train your mind, you couldn't care less, you couldn't bother about life, you do what you like. When you see something you're not happy, you get angry, you react to life, you create a lot of evil, negativity, both to yourself and to others and to society and to the environment and the planet. So when you do that, the Buddha said, your spiritual life is as if dead. Even the Buddha cannot help you. That's why he said, you have to train your mind. You have to develop heedfulness. That's why before he died, he advised the monk, apamadena sampadeta. You know what is the meaning? He said, oh monk, strive on with heedfulness. He didn't say anything else. He said, just strive on. Train your mind to be heedful. That's it. When you can do that, everything is taken care of. So the reason being, once you have trained your mind to be heedful, this is the beginning of meditation. Yeah? That's why purification of mind involves two steps. Training of the mind to be heedful, then using this trained mind to meditate or develop the wisdom. To develop the wisdom or the insight knowledges that the Buddha wants you to develop and understand. So this part is very important, okay? This aspect of mental training, bhavana. So the training here will allow you to have the mindfulness, ever mindful, to see your mental intention behind all of your actions, speech, and thought process. When you have this ability, you can keep your precept. When there is selfishness, when you are about to get angry and violent to do the wrong thing, when you are about to act selfishly or speak negatively or arise a negative thought, lustful thought, straight away you are aware. The moment you are aware, you can arise the right effort to abandon the wrong thought, the harmful thought, the evil thought. So what are wrong thought? Thought that condition your selfishness, your emotional negativity, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your unhappiness, your sorrow and your lamentation. These are all wrong thoughts. Whenever you feel those states in you, suffering follows. So your life, why do you allow it to manifest? Why do you allow it to arise? You must put in the right effort, the four right effort to abandon this wrong thought that will condition your wrong action and wrong speech. This is how sila, the real meaning of sila, can be cultivated. Otherwise, it's at the mundane level. You just try to be good. But the real good inside, you cannot see. Because before you train your mind, you will never see the very fine defilement within your mind. That's why cultivation of bhavana, meditation, is very important. Yeah. So this is the part I want to emphasize today. Yeah? You have to train your mind to be heedful, ever mindful, to see your mental intention behind, so that you understand what sila is, so that you can take care of this cultivation. Yeah? The other thing that the Buddha talked about is your life, he said. To be happy or to be unhappy is entirely your choice. You decide how your life is going to be. I always use this word, you, each and every living being. You hold the key to your own life destiny. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely our choice. Then why don't we choose or decide wisely? Choose to be happy. Choose to be virtuous. Choose to be a true disciple of the Buddha, a true living being. So the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, Dhammapada verse 1 explain how suffering comes to you. And Dhammapada verse 2 explain how happiness comes to you. So when you understand these two Dhammapada words, you will understand the Buddha's teaching. You will understand why he asked you to cultivate dana, sila, and bhavana. And these are very important. So the Buddha said, Dhammapada verse 1, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Your mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind, the Buddha said. So if you are not careful, if you are heedless, you don't bother about life, you don't train your mind, then such a being is it. They will act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, with an evil mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then suffering will follow them, like the wheel that follows the hood. That's how you become afflicted. That's how you suffer. That's how your life becomes entangled and you become miserable. So this is Dhammapada verse 1. Yeah? Then Dhammapada verse 2 is a complementary verse. The Buddha said, again, he repeat, our mind, M-I-N-D, is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So when you know, it's so important, because mind with mental intention lead to karma. So he said, if you are heedful, you will train your mind. So when you understand the importance of training your mind to be mindful and heedful, then he said, if you were to act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, with a pure mind that is free of all the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Such a being, he said, happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. So now you know how to be happy. Huh? Very easy, right? Be heedful, train your mind, never become heedless again, never violate your five precepts again. Understand the teaching, develop the wisdom, then you will know how to live the noble life, the happy life. That's why this teaching is very important, very useful for your own life. And when you have understood this, you become a blessing to all. You can help your loved ones, you can help your friends, your colleagues, and all those that you have affinity or condition with. And through all this, the world, our planet, can be a better place. The consciousness will transform. It will lead to wholesomeness, goodness. And life will become very different on this planet. Once more and more of this living being understand the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. Yeah. Actually, his teaching is just the noble truth. That's why Dhamma is truth. He actually, technically, I use the word, otherwise people will come after me. He never teach Buddhism. Just because he is the Buddha, they add the word ism behind him. That's why his teaching, he call it the Dhamma. He never call it Buddhism. Dhamma is truth. The core teaching, the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truth. Noble truth. Truth that can bring about enlightenment, noble ones. That's why it's called a noble truth, not ordinary truth. So coming back to the last part, Bhavana. I only told you the first part involved training your mind to be heedful and ever mindful. But I never teach you how to do it. Correct or not? Do you all want to know? Okay. You see, whenever you attend meditation, what do they teach you? They give you a series of instructions to do things. Not this, not that. All these teachers, they have different meditation instructions. Some they teach watching the breath. They say, note the breath, breathing in, breathing out. Some rising, falling. Some dynamic meditation. Some they even teach you chanting and all those things. So why is it taught so differently? Because this first part is just to train the mind. So to train the mind, you can use anything. The Buddha already said, whatever that can bring about the training of the mind to be heedful, use it. It so happened he started with anapanasati, breathing. That's why under the four foundations of mindfulness, kaya nupasana, the first category of training is anapanasati, he mentioned. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So mindfulness of the in and out breath is the first training. And all these methods and techniques, they are just skillful means to train your mind so that your mind is centered on the object of meditation so that it's not heedlessly wandering off thinking. Understand that? You have a meditation object like the breath. You anchor your awareness there, mindful of the in and out breath. So your mind and your breathing, they become one, synchronized. Like the Buddha said, breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. So this awareness or mindfulness of the in and out breath will anchor your mind to this phenomena or object of meditation. And your breath is always in the moment. Correct or not? So when your awareness is with this breathing, you are without thought, silent, and in the moment. When you are in the moment, you are in the here and the now. You are not heedlessly lost in thought. Your mind is not distracted. That's why you train your mind this way. But after it's trained, you can let go of the breath. You don't need that breath anymore. You don't need the object of meditation anymore. Initially, because this mind is so heedless, because we have been so heedless for so long before we train this mind, that's why you have to do something about it. That's why in meditation, the first thing that they teach you is some method and technique to train this mind. And I always call this a skillful means. It's just like swimming. Before you know how to swim, what do they say? Most people will advise you, go and take a float. Hold on to a float. Then you can feel the buoyancy, the flotation. Then you can, like, with the float, you can swim. Correct or not? But it's assisted by this. So the float is like a skillful means to help you to float and swim. Just like the object of meditation. It's just an analogy, somewhere near there. So what happens is, if you continue to rely on that float, will you be able to know the actual swimming? You cannot. As long as you hold on to that float, the true swimming, you can never understand. But when somebody who has already gone through and understood all this, then he tell you, let go of the float. Just let go of the float. Do not fear. Continue whatever happened. Be aware. Just be aware. Finally, because your natural state of body is buoyancy, your body will float up. If you have faith in what the advice is, you just give it a try. What happened when you let go of the float? Your body went down. That is the natural tendency because of gravity. But because of the law of buoyancy or flotation, your body mass displays that volume of water. And there is an upthrust on your body. Then your body floats. Understand? Then the moment you realize your body floats, you are so happy. There is so much confidence. Then when you realize the natural state of the body is buoyancy, it's so easy to swim, isn't it? To swim, you just move your hand or your leg. Then you swim. When you realize that, no need to train. You already know what swimming is. And then you can teach people. You can advise people. Meditation is the same. When you silence your mind, when it's already trained, the mind is no longer heedless, you let go of the float, you let go of the breathing, you let go of whatever object of meditation that you have. When that state of silent mind arises, the Buddha called it heedfulness, apamada. Means you are already heedful. You have this heedfulness, this quality of mind to meditate. That's why the heedful never die. Dhammapada verse 21. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. So this is why when your mind is trained, it's so beautiful. You know why? Huh? Do you know why? You train yourself in, let's say, any games or even cooking or anything that you want to do, chess or whatever. After you are trained means what? You are very skillful, isn't it? You are very good, isn't it? You can control what you want to do with it. Like badminton. When you are trained, you are very skillful. You want to serve high, you go high. You want to serve low, you serve low. You want to return that shot, you return that. Means everything is under your command. Understand? You have complete control over the situation. So our mind is the same. Once it's trained, you want it to be heedful, it's heedful. You want it to be silent and peaceful, it's peaceful. That is the trained mind. So meditation is so simple when you understand. Then when it's already calm, peaceful, trained, you can use it for whatever you want, to arise the wisdom, to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, to understand the law of dependent origination, the dwelling, Paticchasamuppada, all this can be done. The first thing is to train your mind, to be mindful, to be heedful. Okay, I got an announcement. Somebody is going to need to move because I think it's blocking somebody. WQD6378 Toyota Camry. Yes. Our sister there. Thank you so much. Don't worry. Take your time. Slowly. We continue. Okay. So now you understand how you train your mind and how you develop your meditation. For those who are interested, you can try and attend some of this meditation class that are around. For your Subang group, actually, Sui An's house, I think most of you all know. Every Thursday, I'm teaching there, 8:30 to 10:30. Anybody who have the interest, sincerity, you can attend. You can contact Sui An. If you want to understand more about meditation and the Buddha Dharma and the teaching, you can attend. No problem. Okay, now I need to summarize what I have spoken to you. You see, most of the time, you heard of what they call Sila Samadhi Panya, isn't it? Correct or not? Sila Then there is this samadhi, panya. You know what is this? Huh? Sila, samadhi, panya. Samadhi is, a lot of people translate as concentration. It's not concentration. It's the stability of mind, unwavering mind, the calm state of silent mind that is not distracted by anything, unwavering. This is samadhi. Then the mind that has wisdom is called panya. Okay? So panya is wisdom. So you see, when you develop meditation, bhavana, you will develop samadhi and panya. Huh? This is the unwavering mind. Collected and unwavering mind. So when you train your mind, samadhi will arise. Then you use it to meditate, to develop the wisdom, panya will arise. That's why sila, samadhi, and panya is actually sila and bhavana. Understand that? But the Buddha add in dana because you need this very important virtue. I didn't explain to you how important it is until now. You see, without dana, without generosity, the law of karma is such. Wealth and all this wholesomeness born of generosity cannot come back to you. So you need this. And the Buddha said when you have this, your life will be better. You will have better condition to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya. So because of that, he wants you to cultivate dana, so that you can have the financial means, the good condition for all the good things to come to you. Like you give of truth because you help people to realize truth. When you come, you inherit this. People will bring forth the condition for you to meet up with the Triple Gem. And when you take refuge, all the things that you do through this will bring forth the condition for you to arise. The good condition to receive, the good condition for you to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya. Then you can make use of this wholesomeness of merits to make the right aspiration for you to realize enlightenment. That's why the Buddha, end of the puja, he always asks us to chant, Itmina punyang kamena. Ma me bala samagamo, satang samagamo ho tu yawat nirvana patiya. You know what this is or not? You heard of this, isn't it? Huh? The Buddha always helped you to make the aspiration, is it? Itmina punyang. Punyang is merit. By the power of these merits, may it arise the causes and conditions for me to always avoid the foolish. Meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. That is how you make use of all this. So dana is very important. Then when you keep sila, of course, this is also one of the meritorious action, one of the 10 meritorious action. When you pay respect, reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious action. When you meditate, is one of the 10 meritorious action. So all these are meritorious actions that can bring about the merits for you to make the appropriate aspiration to realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. Understand, huh? So this is the reason why this topic is very important. The Buddha always emphasized, you must cultivate the importance of cultivating dana, sila, and bhavana. And I hope this can be your New Year resolution. Huh? You can make this your New Year resolution, I will be very happy. I will rejoice with you. Huh? then it will bring about a lot of wholesomeness and goodness, not only to you, to all your loved ones and those who have affinity with you. Because the moment you have this, you transform, you change, you become a different person. Your character, your personality, your virtue, your wisdom, your understanding, the wholesomeness all change for the better. And you are very, very blessed. And you become a true disciple of the Buddha. So with this, I think I will end my talk. If you have any question, you can ask. Where is the organizer? Okay. Ing B can take over. Okay, yeah. You all got any question? You can ask. In the meantime, I make use of the few seconds to have a drink. Anybody got any question? You can ask me anything. Don't have to be just this one. Whatever question that you have, yes. Okay. Okay, we are talking about livelihood. Livelihood. So you see, under Noble Eightfold Path, there is this power factors that they call, the Buddha called right livelihood. Actually, I prefer the word right living. Right living. You see, the Buddha is very fair. He never tell you what to do or insist that you must be what you are. He always said, your life, you decide how you want to live. He is only there to advise you on the truth, the Dhamma, the noble truth. So whatever you do, the cause and effect, the condition will manifest. You are what you are because of your karma. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So there is this what they call freedom to choose, freedom to act, freedom to live. So this Noble Eightfold Path factor is very sensitive. A lot of people who don't understand, they feel a lot of remorse and unhappiness when they come to know their livelihood is based on the supposed to be the word wrong livelihood. Okay? But don't worry. I look at it differently. Because I changed this word to right living. It's the way you live your life. Because sometimes you may not have a livelihood. You may not have a career, the retired person or something. So right living is very important. As long as you hold on to the Noble Eightfold Path, understand or not, there is nothing wrong. As long as you have goodness and kindness, and you don't have any intention to kill or to harm. Like our brother mentioned, if our livelihood is aquaculture, means you rear fish and all those things, it depends on how you understand. Because if that particular livelihood brings about what they call condition for killing and all those things, of course, it has its karmic effect. But it is not so serious if you don't have the greed behind. To just make all this living and livelihood because of money. Understand? Of course, you can say that it's a livelihood. I need to earn. I need to sustain my life. I need to have what they call money to survive. But sometimes, all this career thing can be your love and your passion. If you like to reel all this, like those people who reel this beautiful fish, they have the, what they call arowana. Yesterday I saw on the paper, the star paper, $15,000 in the aquarium. So if you have passion to reel all this, then if you sell it, is a willing buyer, willing seller. Understand that? Whatever it is, if you have love, you look after whatever you real, yeah, properly. There is love. There is sincerity. There is this understanding of the non-negativity. Means you can still do what you like to do. As long as there is no, what they call, the greed or the intention to kill or cause harm to any of these so-called living, I don't know what you call the fish, eh? Living what? Anyway, eh? This thing that you rare, okay? So, as long as you have understanding and what they call wisdom, you will know what to do. Finally, you will know how to change your career or livelihood or what you intend to do for a living to something more relevant. Of course, like you say, fisherman is another extreme. You know, fishermen, they go out, they fish. Then they sell all those fish. Of course, it's quite similar to aquaculture. But aquaculture sometimes is because of passion. They really cultivate this aquaculture. I have seen some of them breed all this very beautiful. But most of them, of course, finally for export and all those things. So the demand for the fish, the prawns or whatever, is based on the market forces, supply and demand. Okay. And more important is when you sell, they are still alive. Understand? You never kill. You never have intention to kill. And you say, it's your livelihood. Well, for me, I look at it, not so bad. Understand? Because when you sell, it's still alive. And the person who buy, then they sell it to maybe to the restaurant or what. And the person whose livelihood is responsible for the killing, that one has his karmic, understand? Somebody has to be responsible for life. But like I say, do not be unduly worried, fearful when you hear this, especially if you are a cook, especially the one that is responsible for killing that thing alive. You see, karma is like that. You reap what you sow. As long as you have goodness, you remember certain religion before they kill or slaughter chicken or the cow or what, they got certain prayer. Do that. Do that, understand? Means you got no negativity. You got no intention to kill, but because of livelihood, you are hired. This is your duty. It's just like during the Buddha's time. Sariputta, he met this executioner. You know, executioner, person who execute people for the government, for the king. When this executioner retired, he heard the Dhamma talk by Sariputta. Then he heard the five precepts, the first precept. Oh, you're full of fear and remorse. Then he asked Venerable Sariputta. You know how Venerable Sariputta answered him? Very beautiful, full of wisdom. He said, when you kill, do you have any anger or hatred towards the prisoner or the person that you are told to execute? He said, no, I pity them sometimes. Then no need to worry, Sariputta said, because it's your duty. Understand? You never instruct to kill. You never want to kill. There is no mental intention to kill. When you execute something because of duty, then it's not you who give the instruction and the mental intention to do. So don't worry, he told this executioner. So this executioner was full of joy. He said, thank you so much, Venerable Sariputta. So all this you will come to understand. Mental intention is utmost important. If you have good mental intention, if you are very wholesome, very virtuous, very kind, don't worry about all this. The karma will take care of you. And you will know how to evolve out of it. Last time during the early day, my eldest brother also used to, that was 20 years ago, he used to tell me he shared a business with some classmate and friend, they are fishermen. He said, good money. Because that time they buy this fishing boat very cheap during recession. People got no money. Then the fish, the prices were very bad. So he remember like stock market, eh? When people don't want, go and buy. So after they buy, when the boom come back, they sell, they make a lot of money. Then because it involved fishing, killing and all those things, I never tell him you must not do. I just like New Year time, we gather. Then sometimes they talk about business and all those things, they update each other. Then when it comes to this fishing thing, he like to tell me a lot of things, that how they make money. Then sometimes when he got problem that time, he said, "Ayo, their fishing boat one day got, I think, the Thai people, sometimes they come and rob your fishing boat. So one day, their fishing boat, don't know, one or two, got robbed." Then he called me. Oh, I knew that was a condition to talk to him. So I talked to him. I said, whatever it is, you don't worry. Do what you have to do. Don't get angry. Don't react. Don't become violent. Don't go and do all those things. Just resolve it amicably. Try to locate the fishing boat. Do what you can. If it has to be written off, you just accept that reality. Because this is the livelihood that will have all these things. And the karmic thing is not only this. I say later, you will come to know it's more severe. Because when this fishing boat, they go and catch all these fish, a lot of fish die, actually. But whatever it is, there is demand, there is supply. So I say, I'm not discouraging you. I say, if you can, because you got other business, you know how to make money. Why not you sell it when you have the condition? Don't touch this livelihood. And he listened to me. And within 4 days, they located their boat. They contacted somebody who know these Thai people, and through the contact, they paid some money. They got back their boat. Then after that, within 2 or 3 months, he sold off the business. Until today, he's not involved. So these are the things you can do. Understand that? So don't go and harp on all these people. Ah, die, you fishing, you do fishing business, or you kill, you what? Don't go and panic people that way. Have goodness, have kindness, have understanding, because different time people do different things. Like when I recall when I was young, when I don't know the Dhamma, I think most of you all do. You kill mosquitoes. You see the mosquito very angry, bah! Then sometimes you use mortine, you spray, you go and hit them. Now I reflect back. That time I was still a kid, a child. I don't understand all this, but I knew karmically, everyone that I hit, the mosquito got a shock before he died. So all this will come back to you. You like it or not? You have to go through life and experience some of this when the condition arises. So I accept that reality. No more remorse. Whatever happened already happened. That is life. You understand, you move. No need to look back. No need to remorse. No need to worry about life. Just live. Understand life clearly. Have goodness. Have the Dhamma. Hold on to the Noble Eightfold Path like what you are chanting just now. Take refuge with the Triple Gem. Your life will be beautiful. I guarantee you. That one I can guarantee you. Okay? Yeah. Any other question? Ah, yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. Yes, that is very useful. Correct, yeah. Sadhu. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think very true. Yes. 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 Correct. Correct. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for that good sharing. You see, like I said just now, she also said, their life, let them decide. That is very important. But what she said is also quite true. She said, mainly, mostly profit-orientated. Because most people went into this livelihood because they want to make money. But there are still a small percentage who may not think that, well, they don't know. They don't know that this is wrong livelihood. So they happen to be involved in those things because circumstances bring about all these things. So don't have to worry. Cultivate the Dhamma when you understand when the condition is there. Like I said, when you don't know, when you are deluded, when you don't have the true understanding of the Dhamma, you still do the things that normal people do. Like when I was young, I still kill mosquito. There was once I remember, I got a group of friends. We were living in a small kampong. They saw this snake. Everybody was hitting this snake with the what they call in Hokkien, the tina. It is a type of stick where you hit already, very painful. It's like a cane like that. Then I saw, oh, I cannot. I can feel the suffering of that snake. I cannot do. Actually, I wanted to join them, but I cannot. I saw the thing I cannot. Then I didn't do. Then the other case was my mother. You know our house last time in small town, a lot of rats. My mother put the rat trap, managed to get one, not too big, not too small, medium size. Then he saw me. He said, okay, dispose of this. I don't know how to do it. I knew my mother wanted me to dispose of it, but how? I tried to think of everything because I don't want to harm this rat. So you know what I came up with? I thought I can just throw it into the pond. Then it will drown, then after that I dispose it. Because I cannot really do it. He asked me to use that thing to kill. Even when he asked me to help her to hold the chicken for her to slaughter. The moment I saw the knife come, I let go of the chicken. I was scolded upside down by my mother. He said, so useless, one chicken also cannot hold on. I said, it's not the chicken. I said, you are about to slit the throat. I cannot, I said. So because of this, the rat is the same. So you know what happened? After I decided to throw, I saw the rat was suffocating actually because that trap go down heavy. Then he was suffocating. Then when I lift the thing up, it's still alive, didn't die. So I quickly took it out and left it there. Then I dare not tell my mother. So when my mother saw, he scold me like anything. He said, so useless. One small rat also don't know what to dispose of. And you know what happened? Because I can sense the suffering of that rat when I was very young. So because of that, when I grew up, I got this sinusitis. So I knew it's part of the karmic that I did to some of this animal. But then I accept this reality. Then I take care of my health. Then I recover. So you have to, when the condition is there, you have to pay back all this. You reap what you sow. What you do to any living beings, when there is condition, karmically it will arise. Even the Buddha is not exempted. Some of the arahants, when they are enlightened, they still have to face their karma. So karma is very powerful. That's why the Buddha said, all evil you have to avoid. It's never worthwhile to do any evil. Okay? Any more question? Otherwise, can we end? Okay, I rejoice. I will do the usual sharing of merit, transfer of merit. Then you make your aspiration. I will chant in Pali. Then we end. Because today I got to attend another house. It's not a dana, it's a potluck, like your potluck. Yours is tonight. Ours is Kayanamita gathering potluck. So I have to leave. Okay. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata cha bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tuloka sasana itawata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabasampati siddhiya Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu. Yāva nivāna pātiyā sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha with gratitude and faith.
Buddhaṃ pūjemi Dhammaṃ pūjemi Sanghaṃ pūjemi Dear brothers and sisters, please to show our gratitude to Brother Teo, let us say three times sadhu to Brother Teo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, Bhatio. Please help to keep all the cushions and the carpet. Thank you, brothers and sisters.